Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman, and this week Andy Rao is out on special assignment. He is doing some stuff with his family, sort of end of summer things. So I've invited a different Andy. You may stack rank them later at your own discretion if you want, but I brought on Andy Jones. Andy, say hi.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for coming on. So Andy, you and I have met, I think just on the playground. So our kids like to play with each other, which is great. And then, I'm trying to remember the first time I think we officially met, we were at a backyard party. And I don't know if you remember this, but like someone mentioned D&D or gaming, like within the vicinity of both of us. And I think we both perked up. And then there was this fun dance of like trying to figure out like, okay, how big of a nerd is this guy? Where, you know, as we're asking questions back and forth. Turns out very, very big. Yeah. So I guess, why don't you tell me a little bit about like, so I know this, but tell me a little bit and like the audience about your sort of your gaming history. Like, how did you arrive to the place where you are coming on a podcast about GMing? what decisions did you make?
I do remember that interaction. I remember your wife perked up and said, tell them about the podcast, Chris.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah.
I was a child of the 80s, and I think my first exposure to role-playing games was paging through my older brother's copy of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, second edition, the player's handbook and the Dungeon Master Guide, and just looking at the artwork and like marveling at what this thing was. I think that like for many years, that's what my experience of role-playing games was. It was not so much playing, but just marveling at artwork and like the worlds and possibilities and the imagination of that these books inspired, you know?
Yeah. Was your brother actively playing too at that point?
I think when we got AD&D, he played a little bit. He would take me on little adventures that he created on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He really started getting involved playing games more when he discovered Palladium books and especially the Rifts universe. So
yes, yeah.
He to this day still plays Rifts. That's like the only game
plays.
He's been playing it for decades. But I remember he started buying Rifts books, and he had a bunch of other Palladium book games like Robotech and Ninjas and Super Spies. I remember kind of going through those games. And what I did a lot, I would just create characters, and that's what he did it too. We would just create the characters and then like, you know, have fun just like looking at our creations.
yes. Yeah.
I think it wasn't until a couple years later when I actually, I think I got it probably for Christmas, I got Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, like the old 1986 first edition. And that's when I started really starting to play a little more myself and being a GM myself with just some of my friends. And it was still kind of fringe back then. My friends didn't really know what role-playing games were really.
Yeah.
And I would kind of take them on these little adventures, not quite knowing what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how I kind of got started. Things changed a lot for me when I was in high school. I started taking guitar lessons at a local music shop. And much like you just described, the interaction between you and me kind of doing the little dance, like, well, do you play that kind of thing?
Yeah.
About a year into my lessons with my teacher, I think I came in the one day and he had a book out. He was reading between lessons, and I noticed it might be something, you know, nerdy kind of.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you reading? And he's like, oh, no, nothing really. No.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, really, what is it? And like, we did this little back and forth. We didn't probably want to admit to each other what we were into.
Yeah.
And we find out we were both really into role-playing games. And his name's John, and he and I became really good friends. And he started inviting me over to his house. He was about 10 years older than I was, and he had a whole gaming group. And I played with him for years and years. He GM'd Call of Cthulhu. We played Deadlands. We played more Warhammer kind of games. And so that was kind of when I really started playing more games, you know, like actively with friends. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah. It's interesting. I think we even talked about this like on the last episode. Like there's definitely like, I feel like in the 80s and 90s and stuff, like there was like a sense that you couldn't really be into the thing you were into at all, right? So like I've had this experience in this conversation with a lot of nerds where it's like, oh, like, you know, like I love playing video games, but I couldn't tell anybody, right? Because like, you know, you beat up or whatever. it just seems like so wild because I think like nowadays it's like, well, of course you play video games. Like literally everybody plays video games and like,
yeah,
of course you play D&D. Like, oh, I've got a friend that plays D&D, right? It's just like not a big deal, but like it was, right? It was a big deal to even like admit that to people and like find a gaming group, right? Because it's like, it's all got to be word of mouth at that point. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm in like theater and improv circles, and a lot of the folks in those circles, you know, quite naturally are drawn to the things like role playing games, and they're mm-hmm. you know, anywhere they can, they're younger than me, a lot of them maybe 10 years my junior, and mm-hmm. and they talk openly about it, and now I'm used to it, but when I first started meeting these folks, I was like, you're just like admitting this, like,
yes,
yeah. it's a huge cultural shift, and I think obviously for the better. I mean, it's just awesome. People can just like, yeah, I play these games, what's wrong with these games? But growing up in the 80s and early 90s, it was kind of like, yeah, you don't want to get beat up for being a gamer, you know, or admitting that kind of a thing. It's really kind of strange, but I'm glad it's changed, you know?
Yeah. Do you find, so I do want to talk about like the acting thing, especially as it kind of intersects with gaming in particular, but do you find when you're talking with people in sort of that, in that arena, are they all playing D&D? Are they watching like Critical Role? Like how are they interacting with like the hobby, right? Capital H hobby.
You know, I haven't had in-depth discussions with people about it that much. I only hear Dungeons and Dragons. That's really what I hear. And that makes sense given, you know, the market share that D&D has. Mm-hmm. I think that, a lot of folks have entered the hobby through D&D, and haven't really gone much past that. Mm-hmm. you know, that's totally fine. That's great. So yeah, I don't hear them talk about other kinds of games that much. I don't know about Critical Role. I do know that, you know, a lot of folks have intersected with the hobby through being a viewer of role playing, which mm-hmm. is just, for those of us that grew up, you know, earlier, that's such a strange phenomenon to be watching someone play the game. Mm-hmm. But the few times I have kind of checked in with those groups, like the, you know, especially like a thing like Critical Role, the production values are so high, the mm-hmm. the acting is so great, the, you know, the creativity of the game masters is great. So it makes perfect sense. And it's just it's so cool to see how this hobby's evolved, you know?
Yeah, it is. Like so me and my wife watch a lot of Dropout shows. Like, we don't watch any Dimension 20 because, again, like it's a big time commitment and stuff. Like it's all excellent, but we were watching one show yesterday and I'm just like, man, like, you know, all these performers who are up there, like they're improv performers, but like, it's almost like this, they've been able to make a career by playing like tabletop games on camera, you know, at the same time. Right. So it's like, you know, like, I'm sure improv pays a little bit. I doubt it pays enough, you know, enough to make a, you know, make a living out of it. But like, you know, hey, if you can get a, you know, make an actual play that millions of people listen to and watch, like then you're talking about some, you know, an actual career you can piece together. Yeah. So I guess what I'm wondering for you, and like, I mean, I don't know how much experience you have with this, was like, what is it about like that intersection that like sort of works, right? So it's like, you mentioned, hey, back when you were little, you used to create characters. I know, like, now that you're in theater, you like the, you know, creating a character, right? So I think there's like a through line there. Is there also a through line there for like when you're playing games of like, oh, like I like embodying these NPCs and that sort of stuff? And does that like kind of scratch the same itch as I'm on stage doing this thing, or are they very separate things for you?
It's different than being on stage for sure, but there's mm-hmm. definitely a similarity there. I remember when I came to improv and theater, you know, in my middle age.
Yes.
Back in 2018, I took my first improv class, and it took me like several months to realize, like, oh, this is what I had been searching for through role playing games for all these years. This mm-hmm. this feeling. This like sense of being in the moment and a presence, and the way that kind of jumping into a character and being in the middle of a story, in the middle of a scene, allows you to really kind of hone in on the moment. Mm-hmm. And I realized that's what I've been searching for a long time with role playing games that I hadn't quite reached. You know, being up on a quote stage, even if it's just in front of some friends in a rehearsal room. It kind of changes things a little bit. And I think there's a sense of that when you're around the table, but usually when I'm around the table, it's with friends and the stakes, there's no stakes really.
Yeah.
And it's just fun. And so there's not that little bit of tension there. So mm-hmm. I think it's very similar. I think for me, it's about embodying characters, and it's about how doing that in the context of a story, of an imagined story, an imagined scene, mm-hmm. how that can allow you to kind of, you know, I think as a younger person, it was about escapism, but now it's just about being present in a way mm-hmm. that day to day, minute to minute, you know, you don't always feel that way. So yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities, but they are a little bit different worlds. And I, you know, having game with a lot of different folks, I think there are people that come to the hobby because they really enjoy that aspect of it, the actual playing of a role. And then there are those folks that enjoy more like the board game kind of elements where the mechanics and, mm-hmm. and playing around with numbers. And for some folks it's kind of a spectrum. So, I super enjoy the mechanic side of things for sure. I'm big into board games too, but for role-playing games, especially now, I go to it, more as another way of playing with characters and being other characters with friends and, you know, and creating new worlds together, those kinds of things.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I think the overlap between people who play board games and role-playing games, I think is like, it's pretty tight. Right. I think there's a lot of board gamers who might never touch a role-playing game, but most role-playing, you know, like TTRPG players will play board games. Right. Like I think it goes back and forth. And I think like for me, it's often sort of like, yeah, what experience do I want to, you know, invoke? Right. Like, yeah. Do I want to just interact with the numbers? I don't really want to do that through my tabletop game. Like if I really want that experience, I'm going to go play some sort of like Euro game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like board game and just like get really into getting the most victory points possible. Right. Like that's a totally different part of my brain at least. Right. Yeah. Like when it comes to tabletop games, I find like the fun for me when it comes to mechanics is like the sidestepping of them almost, or the like confronting them and failing with them, if that makes sense. So like if I have a character who, you know, who is not stealthy, like for me, I'm probably going to end up finding ways to force them into stealthy situations because I just sort of want to see them fail, like, you know, sort of see what happens a little bit. But yeah, so I think this is maybe putting you more on the spot than you want, but I'm wondering, like, is there anything from, I don't know, like if you could wave a magic wand and like teach like sort of one concept from improv to tabletop gamers. Is there anything that you're like, oh, like this would be a really useful skill if just everybody at the game table could have this skill? Or even like, or even maybe an exercise or a specific like improv game that would like help sort of them think through their characters or whatever.
Well, I mean, I think that when people who have never done improv think about it, people are often really frightened by the idea of it. Mm-hmm. And I know that's kind of why I got into it. I saw my wife, she took a class before I did. Mm-hmm. And she had like a little public showcase of what the class was doing. And I went and saw it. And, I was like, that looks terrifying. I need to try that. I'm like, how are they doing that?
Yeah.
And it can be very terrifying to like step up and not know what's going to happen next, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think the lesson there is like, just get out of your own way. Like you are improvising every moment of the day, right? You don't know what's going to happen next in your life. Yes, and so everyone is supremely experienced at doing improv. And so I think just bringing the fear level down about what that actually even means to be doing improv is a really big thing there. I mean, obviously the big mantra in improv is yes, and it's embracing what's happening around you. And then adding something to it, you know, and just bringing something else to what's going on. And that's what people are doing all the time. So there's nothing magical about it. It's just a matter of kind of getting out of the way and going with the flow, you know. And a lot of improv is bad, you know, like 90% of it's pretty bad. And that's kind of the point, is like, you're going to have a lot of stuff that's maybe not perfect. But the 10% that does come out really well, it's like amazing. It's like, wow, we just created something that, you know, that was so fantastic. That feeling is amazing. So I think I've seen that in role-playing games too, where, maybe not surprisingly, I actually, as a GM, feel very uncomfortable improvising. I'm like a prepper GM. I like to go in and like, no, okay, we're doing this.
Yeah.
And I feel much more confident in that. But the times when I've gone into a session feeling very unprepared, those are the times, often, not always, but often, when like something really magical happens. I'm like, wow, I never could have seen that coming. And so I sort of, as a GM, I'm of two minds. You know, I kind of want to embrace the improvisational nature of things and sort of that list of guidelines that they laid down in like Apocalypse World about around gaming. All of that kind of stuff really appeals to me at an emotional level. But when I actually sit down to GM, sometimes I kind of like to have my stuff prepped. I try to find the balance there.
Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah, I think, you know, we've had a lot of GMs on this podcast, and I've talked to tons of people too on the real world. And I think like every GM says some variation of that. It's like, you know, like this, my favorite sessions were the ones where, you know, I lost all my notes right before, you know, or like, you know, lost all my notes, or I didn't have enough time, or, you know, like nothing went to plan, you know, like I had all this stuff prepared and like, they just, you know, totally did a sequence break. Like we didn't roll a single die the whole session and it was amazing. Right. You know, but there's something to that. Like, I think like you almost need to do the preparation in order to have that experience of like the surprise too. Yeah. But I wanted to go back to something you said about like, and this is just because I had never contemplated before, like the 90% of improv is sort of bad, right? Like it never occurred to me, because like everything that I see that's in the improv world is like, you know, like I've been to, I think the only improv show that I went to live is like Second City in Chicago, right? So like bar's pretty high, you know, set pretty high up there, right? You know, like, you know, so there's that. And then like, right, obviously, like watch a lot of Dropout stuff, but like, yeah, so it's like all very, it's produced in a way, right? And it's like people that are professionals and stuff. And like, I think it's probably a good reminder that like, you know, like hobbies can be hobbies too, right? Like you are not trying to, I don't know, you're not grinding to like try to become a 100% an improv comedian or whatever, but like, you know, it's still enjoyable. It's still fun, right? To do that. Yeah. To like, to kind of be okay with that failure too, I think is a pretty important thing to keep in mind, especially for gaming, if you can.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think the pros probably have a much higher hit rate on that.
Yeah,
on
right.
Good and bad for sure. But you know, in the amateur world, you see a lot of stuff. It's like, well, you know, it's okay. Or like little bits come up. So it just depends. But yeah, I think being comfortable with that failure is okay. And you know, I think we often do remember the times when a gaming session went really well, right? But but I know there's so many times too when it just flops, or it's just not what you expected it to be. And That's kind of par for the course, I think. And you need to kind of expect that, especially even if you are highly prepared, you know, people come to the table with different energies on a given night, or, you know, or your brain's working in different ways, and it just doesn't necessarily always come together.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it.
Yeah. I was thinking, cause, so like we're doing the Roll for Topic Cons coming up, pretty soon here. And I was thinking about like, I was trying to remember all the games that I've run at the previous conventions. And like, I had a list in my head. It was like, oh, it was this one, or this one, this one. And then like a couple minutes later, I was like, oh yeah, there's this other one too that I ran, right? That I'd completely forgotten about. Right. At the time, I'm sure I talked about it on the podcast. I was like, this was amazing. This was like the best thing I've ever, you know, ever done. Like I'll never, you know, reach those heights ever again. And it's just like, it was this session that came and went. And I think, like, and it was important to me at the time, but like, if I'm thinking back about like, you know, like what are my highlights, you know, like if I was, you know, to rank everything there, it's like, oh, like that doesn't even like come in the top 10 or whatever it is. I'm thinking through it. And it's just, it's really interesting. Cause it's like, yeah, I think a lot about with this podcast about like the professionalism of it too. Like this is not a professional podcast, but we do show up, we do it every other week, right? It's like, you know, try to keep a cadence and stuff like that. It's like, you know, it's the hobby isn't just like, I don't know, operating at that top level, right? Like it's not like, you don't have to have metrics associated with your hobbies, right? You don't have to do it. It can be a thing that you enjoy to do with your friends. It can be, you know, all sorts of different things to you, right? And I think it's like the accumulation of all that is like why we love the hobby, right? Like it's not just the like, oh, I had a good session, and as long as I keep having good sessions, I like love this thing. It's like, it is the ups and downs. It's the hanging out with friends. It's the game nights that get canceled. It's the ones where you're really well prepared, and the ones that you're not prepared. And like all that stuff sort of like combines into like, oh, like this is what gaming is to me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We, when I mentioned, you know, I was playing games in high school, and I would go to the same group when I came back home from college. But then there was a period of time for, you know, probably 15 years there, 10 or 15 years where I didn't really play role-playing games very much. I they were in my head and I would tinker with designs and things like that. But it wasn't until about 2015 where I finally convinced my friend John I mentioned, who I, my old guitar teacher, I said, let's do this thing. Let's get online and play games together. Cause he was in Florida and for a long time, he didn't believe we could do it remotely. I was like, let's just try it. So we finally did it. And we got some more friends on and we've been playing more or less for a couple of years there. It was just once a month, but for the past, I don't know, 5 or 7 years, we've been playing weekly just for like amazing. 2 hours on a Wednesday night. And it's that consistency of coming together and like, it's great. You know, we check in with each other. I think it's our way of like, you know, I know my wife gets on phone calls with her girlfriends, you know, every few weeks and they talk about real life. It's kind of our way of like getting together and occasionally real life will pop up, but usually not. Usually it's just game stuff or what movies you watch and what video games you play and that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But we've been doing that now for, you know, for over 10 years and, it's been great. You know, it's like, it's like one of my main ways of connecting with friends.
So that's
more important than anything else, I think. But we also have got to play a lot of awesome games over the years, things we, you know, trying out new experimental games and, you know, all that kind of thing. So it's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, that's super cool. I mean, that's like, what a gift to be able to have a group of friends that gets together that often. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm hoping I've got my littlest just turned 5. So I'm hoping that my schedule changes enough to where I can slot some more stuff like that, in, but we'll see. Okay. So I wanted to ask you a question. Like this is a leading question because I sort of know a little bit about it, but like this, was it with this gaming group, you ran like an in-person Call of Cthulhu game that was like almost like a LARP. Is that an appropriate way to describe it? Like a LARP or like a murder mystery or like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, why don't you just tell me a little bit about this? Cause I think this is something that people will enjoy hearing about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't call it a LARP. It was for people who have LARPed, they would recognize elements of that in this game. But, there was very, very few rules around it. Occasionally throughout the experience, I would have the players, draw a tarot card that just indicated like, did something go well or not for you, just to kind of as like a pivot point in the plot.
Okay.
But that was it. That was the extent of it. The rest of it was just what I consider like immersive theater.
Okay.
This was 2 years ago. I prepped this thing for like 6 months. The seed of it, the idea I had was I'm inviting my friends to Ann Arbor, these guys I game with who are all around the country, inviting them to Ann Arbor under the auspices of a gaming weekend. And we'd go out downtown and then someone would approach them on the street and it kind of like guerrilla theater and like draw them into a plot.
Yes.
And I achieved that. Like I brought them downtown. I'm like, my daughter's doing a show. I need to go down there. Will you guys come downtown with me this morning and kind of check it out? Like, yeah, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
And so I parked the car, I come out and this woman runs up from behind them saying, please, please, will you help me? Someone's after me. Someone's following me.
Yeah.
And they bought it hook, line, and sinker. And they were like, they were concerned about this woman. They thought she was being followed.
Yeah.
The guy that was following her actually walked past them. And like, and then he was just like this creepy guy.
Yeah.
And then she's talking to me. She's like, hey, wait a minute. Don't I know you? Your name's Brian. And it was my friend Brian. And she pulls out a flyer with his face on it. And it says Professor Brian's yada yada. He was giving a lecture at University of Michigan the night before. And they were all, their faces were just like, what is happening?
Yes.
Anyway, so that kicked it off. We got them drawn into this day long. It was like a 12-hour thing. Where I had about 8 different scenes throughout the day. They were interacting at real locations throughout Ann Arbor and in bookstores and antique stores, took them to cemeteries. And we ended up, having this big thing in the woods later that evening with like a monster. It took a lot out of me. And I had a cast of 8 people that I brought on to perform different roles. And it was a lot, but it was a blast. It was something that would be hard to replicate because of just the intensity of it. But it was a mixture of some Lovecraftian like horror fiction elements with real history of Ann Arbor.
Cool.
I took like the former, one of the early mayors of Ann Arbor, William Maynard. I brought his past was brought into it and all of that. So that's kind of my sweet spot is melding like real history with kind of fictional elements. I find that I like doing that a lot. So I'm thinking about doing something again in the future, but it was a blast. And, yeah.
I mean, also it sounds exhausting, but also like one of those things where it's like, yeah, you gotta try it. Like once you get that bug in your head, how are you going to not?
Yeah.
Did you find, it sounds like you went into real life locations. Were those people like game to play along with it? Like, were they going in as character and being like, I need this, you know, whatever. This book, do you have it on the shelf? And they go and pull out a dusty book.
I went to businesses ahead of time, like multiple times, had meetings with them. We planned it all out. So they were giving their consent and everything. And then I would have an actor come in to their location and serve as like an employee of that store. So I could actually work with them on a script. It was not the experience wasn't fully scripted, but they had beats that they would hit throughout the interaction with the players. And there were certain clues they had to provide and things like that. So, it was a long process of doing all that. But I think having the being really in, like, I think it's West Side Books, this really cool old store with all these huge books and things, and having that immersion is what I was going for. Just like actually being in a cemetery or actually being that they went into someone's apartment and were like searching for clues and stuff and got jumped by someone. And
Awesome. West Side Books, for those who are not in Ann Arbor, like this feels like the sort of place that you'd turn a corner and there'd be like a cult section, like that's like down a flight of stairs that you have to find. That is so fun. Did you like drive? I mean, this is like, now I'm getting into detailed questions. Did you drive from location to location, or did you have them actually like running around?
We drove where we had to drive. Like one the apartment we went to was in the next city over, Ypsilanti, and we drove places. Sometimes we walked. They ended up chasing someone out of a cemetery. They were supposed to just like spot this guy, like observing them from a distance, and then the guy was going to flee.
Yeah,
and then they decided to chase him down. And like, I was like, guys, wait, let's not run him through the cemetery. I was like afraid for my actor too. He was like actually being chased by someone. Yeah. So there are unexpected things that can happen like that.
That's great though. I mean, with that experience, right? Like, I mean, they always tell like, you know, GMs, like you shouldn't plan specific scenes, right? Cause like, you know, everything can kind of go awry. But I feel like in that experience, it's like, you know, the players are sort of signing up for sort of whatever comes next. And it's like, you know, you kind of got to like, you know, commit to it and, you know, just sort of see where it goes. They can't just be like, oh, well, actually, we're not going to do that. Like, let's just go get some lunch and go take a nap. It's like, right. Well, okay, please, please. I spent so much time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. So do you think you would do it again? Like, would you do a different one, or would you try to run the same thing?
Wouldn't do the same one again. No, I've actually got some things cooking now to do another one. I don't know when, cause it would take some time, but I'd like to have it a bit more. So things are more concentrated in a single location. I think it'd be more fun for multiple actors to be interacting with one another alongside the players as well. So something like that. So I have some ideas. So I would do something different, but I definitely want to do it again. And I'd like to do it such that I could replicate it at least over the course of a couple weekends for different groups. Just to give different folks the experience of it. So I could, you know, basically take all the prep I've done and have it be experienced by people a little more, more people. So I definitely want to do that again.
Yeah, that's great. I'm sure there's like people who are listening to this right now who are like, well, you know, tell me, like, I will sign up for that as soon as you're ready, ready to run it. But I mean, I for sure want to play too. But it's really cool. I mean, I love that. Like, so I know I've talked about this on the podcast, but like years and years ago, a friend of mine and I, we wrote a murder mystery for one of our other friends that like, it was not nearly as extensive of what you were doing, but like, we had a couple different locations and we called in a few of our friends to like pose as actors and stuff. And it was like, it was exhilarating. Like the parts that worked well were like so cool when they worked well. And there was also a lot of like downtime where I'm just like, man, this puzzle I thought was super easy, but is you know, kind of taking them a long time to figure out, you know, like that sort of stuff. There's something there that I think like it scratches a different itch than like sitting down at the table, right? Like, you know, it's definitely like sort of a different thing, but it's super fun. I think anytime you can like, kind of break people out of that. It's like, oh, there's this thing over here. You got to go check out.
Sure. And I think it's important to consider too. There's the lived experience of it, how you're feeling in the moment and how fun it is in the moment. But just like any gaming session, there's also the remembered experience of it.
Yes.
And I know for so many games I've played over my life, I have this enduring experience of what that experience was like, that world we created, those characters, those moments. And I, you know, I go back to that in my mind oftentimes, just like we do with any memories. And it's the same for this. So, you know, unfortunately, you can't know what that experience is like for someone else. I mean, my friends told me like, yeah, I think about it. I thought about it and it was so cool, et cetera. But creating a memorable experience that someone can carry with them in whatever way that is also, mm-hmm. I think, super valuable. And I think when it's enhanced like that, when you're actually, you physically are in the experience rather than just at a table, you know, playing a character, I think mm-hmm. that allows itself to be, you know, very memorable and hopefully give someone an experience they carry with them for a long time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It sounds like you consider that sort of important to you. Do you feel like that is like, I don't know, like I definitely feel like that is the point sort of gaming, right? For me, right? Is like, you know, we want to have these experiences because like it, you know, it does make life better. It's right. Like we could all just be at home watching whatever latest TV show, whatever is on TV. But like, yeah, having these moments where we get together, we tell this story together. Like we can think back on it. Like that's like, I don't know. Like that's why we live, right? Like that's, you know, part of that. Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, would you agree with that? Is like that, like a big part of why you play games is that sort of thing?
Yeah. I absolutely agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still remember back. I mean, I think obviously when you're younger too, I've heard a lot of people discuss, you know, their role-playing experience when they're kids, and just like anything, when you're a kid, it's so visceral and it kind of gets literally like sculpted into your brain, you know, these moments, and it's much more emotional. But I still remember the room where we used to game at my friend John's place. I remember walking into it. He just had a small apartment, but it was this little nook in the back. And all over the walls were taped onto the wall were all these character sheets. And they were all the dead Call of Cthulhu characters that had died over the years. And we would play in that room surrounded by like the souls of these old characters.
Oh my goodness.
It was such a cool setting to play this game in, where like you were constantly on the brink of dying, you know, threat of death. So I still remember those moments, those evenings together very clearly and carry that with me. And so that's just, you know, one example of many mm-hmm. gaming experiences over the years. But yeah, absolutely. It's a big part of it.
That's amazing. Was there a little ceremony he would do whenever he would get another character?
Yeah, there was. I can't remember exactly what we did, but I remember it was like a thing where you got your character went up on the wall, you know. It was like a whole thing. It was cool because, you know, characters die so often in Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
And it was like a way of being able to, it wasn't such a, it was a loss, but he was up there or she was up there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah. It's all right. He's dead, but he's still up there.
Oh my goodness. That's wonderful. Yeah. It reminds me of, so John Corey ran this, Dungeon Crawl Classics funnel. When I think it was the first role for Topicon, but he got like this, the stamp that says like dead on it. So like whenever he killed the character, he would get the stamp out. Yeah, it was so fun. Cause like, it is like, it's this very like final moment in a game, right? Like, and you don't, I don't know, at least at my tables, it doesn't happen very often. I'll say that much, but yeah, it's like, you know, you might as well, you know, make it into something more. Yeah. More than just like, oh, well, oh, that sucks. Like, yeah, you can just make up another one. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we need to wrap up here. This was a really good conversation. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully that was fun for you too, Andy.
No, thanks, Chris. That was awesome. Glad to be here.
Cool. All right. Well, this is Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book with John Corey, with Jess and Ben, is wonderful. You can go listen to it. I just listened to an episode I think they put out like last week or so about the current games that they're running. Sounds super cool. I know Jess is getting excited for Daggerheart, and I'm also excited to check that one out too at some point. And then John is spitballing some ideas for a game that he's going to be running at the con as well. And that sounds good. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm just constantly amazed at sort of the creative energy and like, I don't know, like the insights that they get out of that podcast. So yeah, go check them out at thesplatbook.com. You can also listen to Zombie Strains with Andy Rao and John Corey. They are into their second season at this point. So they're currently exploring, I don't remember, I think it might be the 40s or so, in the zombie movie genre. They're God bless him. That is a lot of zombie movies, but yeah, you can go check them out at, I think it's just zombiestrains.com. Make sure you Google it and make sure you put podcast in there, because Zombie Strains is a different thing, which I found out recently. So, all right. Yeah, so that does it for us. Yeah, again, thanks, Andy. Really appreciate it. I've been Chris Salzman. And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.